Blog Talk Radio.
I got my 1970s jacket on today. I don't know why. In fact, I don't even know why I own this jacket. It really does look like it was straight out of 1978. This jacket is from September of 1978. And I'm working at a car dealership in September of 1978. And I specifically only sell used cars. That's the jacket I'm wearing today. I got a lot of stuff to get to here. So Bernie Sanders endorsed Hillary Clinton. That was yesterday. We discussed that. And Trump took to Twitter, and he went to work, dude. Yeah, man, it was hard to watch. He actually made some good points. Ugh, pains me to say it. But we're going to talk about that. We're also going to talk about Donald Trump's heaping dose of fake outrage. I mean, I always find it hilarious when people think, like, oh, he's the anti-PC police candidate. He's the social justice warrior candidate. I've maintained for a long time he actually is a social justice warrior. He actually is somebody, and obviously he's the right-wing version of that, but the way he gets mad about jokes and the way that he lashes out at his critics for the most minor infraction, all these things prove that this isn't a guy who's like a crusader for free speech. He's a guy who's a crusader for people who agree with him and they, lend their voice to the conversation. Anybody who disagrees with him, fucking forget it. Then he's coming after you ruthlessly. So we'll talk about that. And a whole bunch more other stuff. So let's go ahead and get started here. And we'll kick it off. Actually, you know what? Right off the top of my head, this isn't even a segment I have planned, but I figure some people are tweeting me about it. I figure I might as well discuss this third-party issue real quick. So by this point, the overwhelming majority of you know exactly what I plan on doing in the general election. I've described in detail how if you're in a deep blue state or a deep red state, I know I am because I live in... okay, let me start this over because I already fucking mess it up. So all you guys probably know by now where I stand on the general election and how I'm going to vote. I'm in New York. It's a deep blue state, so I plan on voting third party because my state's going to go to Hillary either way. There are a bunch of deep blue states out there and a bunch of deep red states out there. And I've said if I happen to be in any of those states, if I lived in any of those states, and like I said, I do, I would vote third party. I've also said that I would cry and vomit and shit myself and curl up in the fetal position and hate myself as I vote for Hillary Clinton if I lived in a swing state, because I do believe that she is the lesser of two evils for all the reasons that I've laid out for you guys a dozen times, you know, previously in different segments. So I'm not going to get into all that now, but what I do want to talk about is a strategy that we could use moving forward in order to make this a more democratic system, in order to have more voices heard and address more issues. So you need Gary Johnson and Jill Stein to poll above 15% to get into the presidential debates. That's, of course, Gary Johnson, the Libertarian Party candidate, Jill Stein, the Green Party candidate. As of right now, I think Gary Johnson is polling at about 10%, depending on what poll you look at, and Jill Stein's polling at about 4%, depending on which polls you look at. So what we need to do is, even if you don't want either of them to win, and even if you're big-time Team Trump or a big-time Team Hillary, what you should do is you should spread the word that people should support third-party candidates in polls moving forward here. So if you happen to get contacted by a pollster or something, you know, and they ask you who do you support, say Jill Stein or say Gary Johnson, even if you don't. Because we want to get to a point where they hit 15% so that they can get into the debates. So it's just making this more democratic, more open, addressing more issues, having more political positions on the spectrum covered for the country to see in the debate. I mean, obviously the debates would be fun with Trump and Hillary, but they'd be fun with Trump, Hillary, and two other saner people on the stage. And that's exactly what Gary Johnson is and Jill Stein is. So even if you don't support them, perhaps saying you support them to get them in the debates is a good idea, because we should have more options. We shouldn't just be down to a choice of the lesser of two evils. Now, again, I largely think that is the boat we're in, because it's going to be either Hillary Clinton or Donald Trump that ends up being president, which is why I hesitantly say that in swing states I would vote for Hillary Clinton. But definitely in non-swing states, I wouldn't, and I'm not going to. And we should definitely try to up the profile of the Libertarian Party and the Green Party, because that can only help the country, and that can only help the political spectrum, and that can only raise awareness for all these different issues. And remember, for everybody who's super disheartened about Bernie Sanders endorsing Hillary Clinton, Stein is not only like Bernie Sanders, she's actually to the left of Bernie Sanders on many issues, so much so that she might be to the left of somebody like me. But the thing is, as I've described in U.S. politics, there's no shame in supporting a candidate to the left of you, because that person's not going to get everything they want anyway if they were elected. We have a system that's set up for conflict. We have a system that's set up for checks and balances. So, for example, when she comes around and says, I want to go so far on college debt that I want to erase all of it and then also have free college. By the way, that's not one I even necessarily disagree with. But she wouldn't necessarily get all that if she pushed for that. But maybe the compromise is, we don't address the debt, but we do have free college from here moving forward. So anyway, I think you get what I'm getting at here, which is you could pick somebody to the left of you in the U.S., and they're not going to get everything they want anyway, so that's going to get whittled down anyway. So maybe the positions you end up getting are your ideal positions. So even if you don't support her and you think she's too far left, some things that I don't agree with, like she's sold on the idea of getting rid of nukes. I'm not really sure that's possible. I think it's crazy to have nukes and to not have nukes. Both is crazy. We're in between a rock and a hard place now. So, that's just a difficult issue in general. But I don't really want to get into that. Bottom line is, support them even if you don't really support them, because you want to get their voices in the debate. You want to have those positions represented, and you want people to understand that they do have a choice. At the end of the day, yeah, the way the elections work right now, it unfortunately is a lesser of two evils, proposition. But if you get both of them in the debates, that can only help in terms of raising awareness for issues, forcing Trump and Hillary to respond to them in a way that we can hold their feet to the fire and hold them more accountable and get them on the record more. And also, if we make it so that one of these people makes a decent run at it and has a decent showing, that scares the pants off the establishment. Ross Perot, for example, when he ran, he got the most votes of any independent candidate ever. So that's when the establishment got together and said, we should probably shut these motherfuckers out of the debate and make it only a Republican or a Democrat that can win, and make it super hard for them to get in the debate if they're an outsider voice, because when the outsiders come in, they wreak havoc and they can really affect the election. So my response to that is, yeah, let's have it so that these people can still affect the election. I want the establishment to be scared. I want them to feel like they're outsiders who can come in and bust up the entire system that they got going on that's beneficial to them and them alone. So even if you don't support Gary Johnson or Jill Stein, say you support them, because we need to find a way to get them in the debates and get their voices heard, because the polls show right now, these are the two most disliked candidates for the Republican Party and the Democratic Party in history. That's literal. So there are more people now than ever saying, hey, you know, it would be great to have a third option or a fourth option. Well, you do. I mean, again, at the end of the day, it really is just between Hillary and Trump because of the way the system's set up and just how much it's stacked against these Libertarian Party candidate, the Green Party candidate, independent candidate, so on and so forth. But they are there. They are there. So in some circumstances, you absolutely should support them. I'm going to support Jill Stein, and that's something that we should all keep in mind moving forward. Okay, now, let's go to Donald Trump really busting up Bernie Sanders. So after Bernie Sanders endorsed Hillary Clinton yesterday, Trump took to Twitter, and he went to work. Oh, this is cringeworthy. Oh, this is rough. This is rough. He said this: I am somewhat surprised that Bernie Sanders was not true to himself and his supporters. They are not happy that he is selling out. All right. Right off the bat here, I disagree with the framing that he's selling out. I did a long segment on this yesterday explaining why I think he, in fact, didn't sell out, even though he ended up supporting Hillary Clinton, who is, in his mind, and I think this is a fair assessment, the lesser of two evils. I think Bernie knows she's the lesser of two evils. He wouldn't say that because he can't say that, but in his mind, yeah, he looks at her record, he looks at what she's done, and in his mind, he really goes, yeah, lesser of two evils. So this is, it's a rational calculation. It's not like he's selling out because he's getting something, some personal benefit from this, and now he's going to become a lobbyist and make millions of dollars. No, everybody knows Bernie Sanders isn't going to do that. So no, I don't think he's selling out, but is it true that many, many Bernie Sanders supporters are let down? And is it true that on some level Bernie was, you know, not being true to himself in saying, yes, I am going to enthusiastically support Hillary Clinton? That's kind of true. That's kind of true. Even though it's Trump saying it, it's kind of true. He goes on to say, Bernie Sanders endorsing crooked Hillary Clinton is like Occupy Wall Street endorsing Goldman Sachs. Oh, God. Oh, no. Oh, he said that. Oh, he said that. And that's a devastating tweet. That may be one of the best tweets I've ever read in my life. Fuck me. Fuck. Okay, that's witty as a motherfucker, and that looks like something I'd say. By the way, I love how I'm calling it one of the best tweets I've ever read in my life, and then I'm following that up with, obviously it's like I would have said it. I find a way to spin the story to make it about me, in true narcissist fashion. But, no, seriously, that's a really good point. Is Hillary Clinton a massive sellout? Yes. Is she part of the corporatocracy and the oligarchy? Yes. Has the Clinton family raised over $3 billion in their career? Yes. That's for everything. That's the Clinton Foundation. That's for the respective super PACs. That's for the campaigns. And that's speeches where you put the money directly in your pocket. That part is not a question. It's not like, oh, since now Hillary Clinton is the Democratic candidate, I guess we have to pretend like she never took any money, and now all of a sudden she's an angel and she's right about everything because she's the Democratic candidate. Now she's the only choice for the Democratic Party. No, all those facts still exist. So when you do have the most insurgent, anti-establishment, outsider candidate who hates the oligarchy, who hates money in politics, saying when push comes to shove and he loses, yeah, I guess she's the lesser of two evils. Is that kind of like Occupy Wall Street endorsing Goldman Sachs? Yeah, it kind of is. It kind of is. Again, I think the only difference here would be that if he went, like, what does Trump want? Do you want Bernie to endorse you? Like, I don't, like, what's your beef? Like, what do you think is going to happen here? And while it's true that Hillary is a disaster, in Bernie's mind, and I think this is an accurate assessment, you're worse. So what? He had the choice of either endorsing Goldman Sachs or endorsing Goldman Sachs on steroids. endorsing somebody who is worse. Now, again, Hillary's actually raised more money than Trump, so maybe that's not a fair analogy. But bottom line is, does Trump want to partake in this corrupt system? Yes. In fact, he has to a large extent. So, for example, he ripped Jeb Bush for taking a bunch of money from specific donors. I think it was one of them was like the head of Johnson & Johnson. And then, so he ripped them specifically for taking money from that guy. Fast forward to the general election. All of a sudden, that guy is running Trump's fundraising efforts. Okay, here's a guy who begged for money from billionaires at the beginning of the campaign in the primary season. They snubbed him. Only after that, he went out there and said, the system is corrupt and the billionaires and they're buying people and, this guy's a puppet and this guy's a puppet. And you wanted to be a puppet. And at the time, they didn't want to pay you. Now, by the way, they do pay you, but they still don't pay you that much. So you want to partake in the system and you can't do it effectively because they don't trust you. They don't think you're going to be a good little sellout puppet bitch, even though, by the way, I think you are. Because what they don't understand about Trump is he's a fantastic liar. So he goes out there and says, I'm against the trade deals. Bitch, he personally benefits from the trade deals. He has his shit made in China. He has shit made in Mexico. As he says, we got to stop sending these jobs overseas, punish these corporations. Well, what are you going to do, punish yourself? Because you benefit from it, and it's not like you're not just automatically enrolled in these programs and you just naturally partake in NAFTA and the WTO. No, he chose to benefit from those things. So he is a hypocrite. I don't think it's the same as like Ron Paul when Ron Paul ended up taking Social Security and Medicare, because those, it's almost like you're automatically enrolled in it, and they're programs that apply to almost everybody. So I don't see a level of hypocrisy there. Do I see hypocrisy in Trump benefiting from trade deals as ties are made in China, as he goes around bashing China and saying their trade policy is fucked up? Hell yeah, there's hypocrisy there. So, all right, he says that. Let's continue here. He says, Bernie Sanders has abandoned his supporters by endorsing pro-war, pro-TPP, pro-Wall Street crooked Hillary. Oh, God, this keeps getting worse and worse, man. Oh, no. He really went there. This is the first time in my lifetime we have a Republican candidate for president who outwardly, on numerous occasions, is claiming to be anti-war and hitting Hillary, the Democratic candidate, for being pro-war. I've never seen this before. Now, again, the thing about Trump is he's a liar and he's great at it, so you have to be careful with what he says, because he says he's anti-war. Meanwhile, we could queue up the tapes of him saying a zillion things about he's going to bomb ISIS into oblivion, he's going to target civilians in the Middle East, he's not going to care about the Geneva Convention, he's going to bring back torture and worse than torture. So half the time he says more hawkish shit than Hillary, and he's going to get more involved in all these conflicts overseas, and the other half the time he's, no, less involved. Okay, which is it? A massive contradiction, and it makes no sense. You can't really determine what he believes. He's like this loose cannon who says anything that comes to his mind at the time. Libya is another great example. We have the video of it, him saying, he's for intervention, Gaddafi's got to go, we got to go in there and knock him out. Then he says, I'm against intervention, I was never for intervention. And then, no, I am for intervention. Which is it, dude? So you got to understand, he's a crazy person. So, you can't, you don't really know what his position is, but this is the first time in my lifetime that a Republican candidate says, this person's pro-war and that's bad. The Republicans have always been like, yeah, war, great. He's like, no. And he keeps hitting TPP, man. Again, I don't believe him because he personally benefits from all these trade deals as he rants against them. He's got ties made in China and shit. But his rhetoric is still solidly against it. He called her pro-Wall Street crooked Hillary. Now, he tried to get bought by the same people, and they didn't want to buy him at first. So he's angry at them, which is why he lashes out against Wall Street. If he could get more support from them, he would absolutely love it and take it, okay? He is taking money from big donors, even though he said he wasn't. But it is still amazing. The Republican candidate's like, puh, Wall Street, you suck. So this line of attack is a devastating line of attack. It is devastating. And remember, he keeps hitting Bernie. I mean, it's amazing. I have to come out here now and defend Bernie's integrity against a cretin and an idiot like Donald Trump. But understand, I do believe that in Bernie's mind, all he's doing is endorsing the lesser of two evils with Hillary Clinton. And that's not a crazy calculation to make that, oh, I think Hillary is the lesser of two evils. And then finally, he says, to all the Bernie voters who want to stop bad trade deals and global special interests, we welcome you with open arms. People first. Hillary has no clue what the fuck she's getting herself into, man. These debates are going to be so incredible because there's a chance Trump curb stomps her in the debates. Just absolutely runs roughshod over her. And there's nothing but a chalk outline of Hillary on the ground when it's said and done. And if he goes left and stays left and keeps hitting her from the left, she's not going to know how to respond, and she's going to be a mess, and she's done. She'll be donezo in that scenario, and I think he'll win the election. But then there's also the possibility that she's prepared for him to go to the left, and she can outflank him on the left, too, by doing better rhetoric from the left, in which case, then I think she maintains the lead that she has in the polls, and she ends up winning. But the signs from him here, like he may have just went on this little Twitter rant specifically to try to get more Bernie voters on his side, which polls show he's already going to get about 20% of them, which is amazing. He could have specifically targeted this stuff to try to get the Bernie supporters on his side, and it's like a short-term strategy thing. And then, you know, he still continues to be a massive douchebag in other respects, and he exposes himself in that light, and then he loses the election. But if he uses this rhetoric the rest of the way forward, yes, I think he can win. And yes, I think there's a chance he even wins in a healthy way. I know it's crazy to say because, you know, she is a favorite, and she's been a favorite for a while now, but that doesn't factor in how they're running their campaigns. And I get it. He has super high unfavorables, but she also has super high unfavorables. And Trump does not have the issue with the FBI not indicting him while at the same time admitting, he lied about everything. That's what happened with her. She lied about everything. But the FBI still didn't indict her. So 56% of the country, we covered the story yesterday, 56% of the country, overwhelming majority, says she should have been indicted. So you mix that with the fact that she's the status quo candidate, she's the establishment candidate, he's portraying himself as the anti-establishment candidate, and now he's sounding like Bernie Sanders himself when he says shit like this. Oh, man, it's rough. It's rough. And just as a final note of caution here, again, what I need everybody to understand is, because I see it myself from a lot of Bernie supporters who are like, fuck it, I'm going Trump now. If you think he really means this shit, you don't know anything about Trump. And I'm not just saying that either. Okay, like, so you go to his record and you go to, I'll be kind here, half the shit he says. And it's a progressive's worst nightmare. So what makes you think that only when he says the good shit, he means it? You see what I'm saying? So when he says, hey, I think, and he said this on Twitter years ago, unprovoked, when he wasn't a candidate or anything, climate change is a hoax perpetrated by the Chinese. So he says something like that on Twitter. What makes you so sure he doesn't believe that? It's a serious question, because if there are progressives who are like, I'm going to vote for him. Well, Bernie himself said climate change is like a World War II level crisis that we need to address immediately. And Trump's saying, well, no, I want to go full speed ahead, continue with dirty energy and coal jobs, as he said. I'll rip up the Paris Agreement on day one. He couldn't be more dead wrong on climate science. What makes you so sure that he's, you know, oh, it's a disguise and it's a trick on all the things he says he disagrees with you on? He's just saying that to appease the right to get elected so he can be, what, liberal, progressive when he gets in office? I don't think there's any good reason to believe that. I don't think that's a rational view of the situation. Like, when he casually said, in a way that was scary in how confident he was in this thought, when he said, we need to go after the families of ISIS. We need to go after the families. We have to target the families. So he's talking about killing civilians in the Middle East. When he says something like that, what makes you so sure that, oh, no, that's the thing, he's just appeasing the right, but what he really means is let's abide by international law? Well, again, he's on the record. He said the Geneva Conventions is the problem. When he says, I'll just make a great deal and we'll default on the debt, what makes you so sure that he doesn't think that's crazy? Because he did that with all his personal businesses, with four of his businesses. he went into bankruptcy. He said, I'll just make a deal, because he's used to using the laws, you know, in his favor to run out the back door with all the money and screw over all the workers in the various companies he had. He thinks he can do that with the country, too. Like, well, I'll just default, and then we'll call it a day, and we'll, you know, we'll work something out. What makes you so sure that that's not the thing he actually believes, and that's actually, you know, not the thing he'll actually do, you know? And look, a counterargument is, well, Kyle, what makes you so sure all the bad things are the things that he will do? I'm not sure, but I don't want to roll the dice, because some of his rhetoric is the most grotesque shit I've ever heard. It's outwardly fascist. Deport 11 million people, ban 1.6 billion Muslims, an entire religion. Ban all these people from entering the country. I mean, this isn't something where even if there's a 5% chance, a 10% chance that he might do it, that you want to risk it. And Hillary's a disaster, as I've said repeatedly. But would I call her the lesser of two evils? In the same way Bernie Sanders believes it, I believe it. So scared about is this is a very, very solid strategy. And it's going to work on some people. We already have about 20% of Bernie supporters that are going to vote for Trump. About 50% of Bernie supporters are just so disillusioned with Hillary that they might not vote for her. Actually, that's not true, because as of right now, I think it's 64% that would vote for Hillary. That's still not all that much, man. And will this endorsement change things? I don't know. You know, Bernie people have this streak of, and this makes sense, of being totally independent thinkers, and they don't just go where their dear leader tells them to go. They can analyze things themselves. But look out, because everybody's continuing to underestimate Trump, and you do that at your own peril. Okay. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, Donald Trump is going to hit us with a heaping dose of fake outrage, and I can't wait to discuss that story. Speaker Paul Ryan did a town hall event on CNN, and he said some ridiculous shit. And we have some damning evidence that at least in some ways, George W. Bush's Republican Party was a little more liberal than today's Democratic Party on some issues. You're not going to want to miss that. Stay right there, guys. guys.
We are back.
Donald Trump hit us with a heaping dose of fake outrage yesterday. He spoke to the New York Times about Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and he said this: "I think it's highly inappropriate that a United States Supreme Court judge gets involved in a political campaign, frankly. I think it's a disgrace to the court, and I think she should apologize to the court. I think I couldn't believe it when I saw it, and I would hope that she would get off the court as soon as possible." So he's calling for Ruth Bader Ginsburg to step down from the Supreme Court. Now, why is that? Well, very simply because he got his feelings hurt. I'm not kidding. So he's throwing a tantrum because Ruth Bader Ginsburg said, this guy's a faker, quote, a faker who should release his tax returns. I mean, that seems like a simple request. By the way, I don't even think that would necessarily hurt Trump, even if he paid 0% in taxes, because his followers would be like, oh, that's awesome, I want to pay 0%. So I think it's funny that people on the left think, oh, that'll get him. No, that's not going to get him. There's been a million other things worse than that that haven't gotten him. I don't know why you think that'll get him. But she says he should release his tax returns, and she said, quote, everything would be up for grabs with him as president. I'm not even sure I know what that one means. What does that mean? Everything would be up for grabs with him as president. Like, he's so crazy and he's so out there that all, like, rule of law disintegrates? I don't know. Is that what she's getting at? Maybe. That's just one interpretation of it. Maybe you guys have other interpretations of it. But that's it. That's all she said. He's a faker, should release his tax returns, and everything would be up for grabs with him as president. And as a result of that, Trump's like, oh, the court is not impartial. We don't have an impartial court. It's not neutral. So, therefore, you know, she's a bias against me. She should step down. Okay, this story highlights something about Trump that I honestly haven't seen anybody else talk about, except maybe Bill Maher has touched on it. But it's the idea that Trump is in no way the embodiment and the epitome of this anti- PC police mentality. Like, oh, everybody's too sensitive. They're too politically correct. They get outraged over everything. What the fuck do you think this is? Trump, he's so anti-SJW. He's so against social justice warriors. Trump is a social justice warrior. He is the PC police. He's just the right-wing version of it. Okay, don't fucking kid yourself. Every single person who knows anything about politics in the United States of America already knew that Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a liberal Supreme Court justice, is not a fan of Donald Trump. That's not fucking hard to figure out. In the same way that you can imagine Clarence Thomas is not a fan of Hillary Clinton. And if he said something, I'd be like, duh. But no. Crank up the fake outrage machine. She dared utter a peep against the dear leader. Therefore, oh, she should step down. The court's not impartial. You want to talk about the court being impartial? What about what happened in fucking 2000 in Bush v. Gore, where the Supreme Court handed over the election to George W. Bush? Despite the fact that there was still a question as to who actually won in terms of the vote count. All the conservatives said, oh, states' rights to do their own recount. No. Shut it down. Election over. Give it to George W. Bush. This massively biased court, back then, they're like, shh, it's fine that it's biased, shut the fuck up. Ruth Bader Ginsburg dares to say a few little words against Trump. Oh, she must step down! She must step down! Oh, please, you guys are the PC police. You guys are right-wing social justice warriors. Donald Trump is a guy who sued Bill Maher over a fucking joke. And by the way, I mentioned before, Bill Maher's kind of onto this. He calls Donald Trump a whiny little bitch. That is what he is. People think he fights the whiny little bitches. No, he actually is, in his own right, a whiny little bitch. So there's no way around this. You know, he sued Bill Maher over a joke. Bill Maher said, oh, you know, his hair color, it's not found in nature. The only thing is this orangutan that looks kind of like it. And, oh, if you can prove to me, because Trump's a birther, oh, you need to show me a birth certificate to Obama. So Bill Maher said back to him, you need to show me on your birth certificate that you're not the love child of your mother and an orangutan. So Trump was outraged. He sued him. Served him legal papers and everything. The Onion wrote a satire article about Trump. He sued The Onion. This is a guy who said we're going to open up our libel laws to sue people who write things that we disagree with. That if they come after us, just sue them. Open up the libel laws. Okay, this is a guy who's for free speech and free expression? That's the opposite of a guy who's for free speech and free expression. The whole idea is you should be in favor of it even if they say things you disagree with. Trump's like, if you disagree with me, I'm going to sue your punk ass. So, no, spare me. Oh, my God, yeah, he's going after the people who want to language police. Ruth Bader Ginsburg said a few words about him, and now he's saying, you should lose your job over it. Tell me again who's language policing? What a fucking joke this is. Okay. All right, now let's go to Speaker Paul Ryan. Speaker Paul Ryan did a town hall event with CNN last night. Nobody really knows why. And he spoke about Trump and the deficit and the convention and a million other things. But one line sticks out to me specifically. This is one that just gets under my skin. He said the Democratic Party has moved, quote, far, far, far to the left. And he says, well, now they're unreasonable and they're unlike what they were in the 1990s. So it's hard to work with them when they're so extreme. In fact, we have video of it. Let's watch.
You were asked yesterday if you could work with her, and you said there's very little common ground between the GOP and the current Democratic Party. Are you saying you're not going to be able to work with her?
Well, I'll certainly try. The point I'd say is this is not the Democratic Party of the mid-1990s. This is not the Democratic Party of budget, balancing the budget and welfare reform like we got in 1997. This is the liberal progressive party of Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, and yes, Hillary Clinton. I think Hillary Clinton is a very liberal progressive. They have moved far, far, far to the left. And so in the 1990s, there was a little more overlap between the two parties and more room for common ground. So I do not see the kind of common ground with the liberal progressives like we had with the Democrats in the 1990s. I don't like saying this. I wish it weren't the case, but sadly, I think it is.
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life. So this Democratic candidate, who is now going to lead the party, supported the Iraq War. Is that a really liberal progressive idea? The Patriot Act, NAFTA, TPP, and deregulation. I have a hard time finding areas where Hillary Clinton was actually liberal. She, on so many issues, just completely agreed with the Republicans. Completely. Not even, hey, I'll meet you halfway, this and that. No, she just agreed with you. It's never enough. It's never enough. Oh, no, even when you agree with us exactly, I'm going to say you don't agree with us. Why? Because you're a Democrat, so there's a D in front of your name. Therefore, you're the bad guy. Therefore, we make up this narrative in our own mind that's not connected to reality at all that says, oh, my God, you've moved so far left. Now, what's really happened over the years? The Republican Party has moved insanely far right. This is a party that it wasn't always the case, like, oh yeah, no, we support offensive wars, wars of aggression. No, but that was the Bush doctrine. Offensive wars. Let's attack first, let's not do self defense for wars. That's insanely right wing. Then also, obviously, they set up torture. They did torture, man. And he's saying it's not us that have gone too far right, it's the Democrats who have gone too far left. Of course, they set up, the NSA and the spying regime. Forget your Fourth Amendment rights, they're gone. This is a party that didn't always support privatizing Social Security. Eisenhower said, if you disagree with the New Deal programs, that's un-American. Well, now you have the entire Republican Party's like, we disagree with the New Deal programs. They want to privatize Social Security. They want to privatize Medicare. And the only kind of welfare they actually do believe in is corporate welfare. So this is a party that is so insanely far right, and many of them are just outwardly fascist. They're outwardly fascist. Some of them are Christian theocrats. You know, they're not remotely connected to the real world and the wants and the needs of the American people. But he has the nerve to go out there and lecture this Democratic Party, which has creeped right over the years, and say, you haven't moved right enough. And then also, by the way, he goes on in that clip to give specific examples. So you heard one there. He said, you know, this isn't the Democratic Party of balancing the budget. Okay, you do know that George W. Bush left for the deficit. So the budget is the accumulation, the debt is the accumulation of, you know, the individual deficits. The deficit is annual. But George W. Bush left when he left office. It was a $1.4 trillion deficit. What did Obama do with that? He more than cut it in half. It has gone down the years he's been in office. So he is reducing the deficit. But they don't care about facts. He's like, I'm just going to say that you don't care about that stuff. Dude, the Democratic presidents have been better on that issue than the Republican presidents. Ronald Reagan, record debt, record deficit. George H.W. Bush, record debt, record deficit. Ooh, Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton actually left us with a surplus. So he eliminated the annual deficit and made it a surplus. That's better than you guys. George W. Bush blew it up. Barack Obama's making it better. The Democratic presidents are better on the issues that you say you care about than you are. And then he also goes on at one point to say, this party's too extreme. They did Obamacare. Are you that ignorant or are you just a liar? That's my question to Paul Ryan. Because Obamacare, it's an individual mandate reform. The individual mandate was birthed by Richard fucking Nixon. So it was Richard Nixon's idea. He proposed a very similar plan. And then later on you had Bob Dole propose a very similar plan. And then also you had the Heritage Foundation, which is a right-wing think tank, write policy papers about how they support an individual mandate system, which is Obamacare. And they say, well, this is our counter to the Democratic proposals, which at the time were more like single payer, like every other modern nation has to one extent or another. So this was the right-wing free market health insurance reform that they came up with. Newt Gingrich supported this in the 90s. Chuck Grassley did. Super conservative, deeply conservative Republican. Now all of a sudden that Obama does their idea, oh my God, this guy is so far left, it's unbelievable. So far left, he's doing your fucking ideas. No, you don't need evidence, you don't need data, you don't need facts to be Paul Ryan, to be in this Republican Party. They make up everything. They make up everything. This Democratic Party, I mean, the only people in the party, I mean, maybe it's Bernie Sanders, Alan Grayson, Elizabeth Warren, and some people in the Progressive Caucus, but it is a minority of the party that believes in traditional democratic values like single-payer health care, like universal education, like making the minimum wage a living wage. I mean, these are not things that are not that hard to figure out, increasing taxes on the rich. You know, you talk to Democrats now, they'll say, no, Obama did a good enough job. But no, if you look at the polls, the American people want to raise taxes on the wealthy more. And it's only a few people in the Democratic caucus, the Progressive caucus, that want to go further here. So I'm not sure we have any real liberals in our government. Now, again, they think that's fucking crazy. But what's my basis for saying that? You take Bernie Sanders and you put him in any other modern nation, the guy's a fucking centrist. He's a centrist through and through. He's not some sort of far left winger. But these guys, they don't just look at Bernie Sanders and go, oh my God, super far left. They look at Hillary Clinton and go, oh my God, so far left. What more can she fucking agree with you on for you to say, okay, you know what, kind of centrist, or kind of in agreement with me, kind of right wing. There is no amount of evidence, there is no, you know, data, there is no information that can change their mind. They already made their mind up. Democrats bad, Democrats far left. I don't need any more reasons. I don't need policy positions. I don't need any of that stuff.
I have my narrative, and I'm sticking to it. These guys, and people wonder, like, why do you go after the Republicans so aggressively? Because they say shit like this, which a 10-minute Google search can debunk everything he says. The dude is Speaker of the House, and he has verbal diarrhea in front of the world where he says embarrassing things that could only have been birthed on the Rush Limbaugh show or the Glenn Beck show. There isn't a legitimate opposition in the United States of America. The Democratic Party is a shitty center-right, pro-corporate, pro-establishment party. I can't stand the Democratic Party. But the Republican Party is a bunch of toddlers wearing suits and ties who believe in ancient fairy tales, because a lot of them are religious fundamentalists, and they also believe in what George H.W. Bush used to call, believe it or not, voodoo economics, which is always cut taxes on the rich, always deregulate, everything will work out great. That's the answer. Get rid of all the social programs, get rid of all the stuff that helps the poor people. Ugh, gross, poor. Who wants to help them? So do that, and everything will be hunky-dory. So this is a party that in no way, shape, or form is connected to reality, and it's obvious to see when somebody like Paul Ryan says the party has moved far, far, far to the left, when in no way have they moved far, far, far to the left. I got more evidence to that effect right here. So we have some pretty damning evidence here that today's Democratic Party is actually more right-wing on the issue of Israel than even George W. Bush's Republican Party. That's hard to wrap your mind around, but it's true. So let's take a look at some headlines here. This is The Guardian in 2008. Bush calls on Israel to end occupation of Palestinian land. Wow. Wow. Number one, you wouldn't expect to see that headline at all. Number two, wait until you see it in comparison to the ones about today's Democrats. All right, let's look at another one from back then. This is again in 2008. Bush criticizes settlements on Israel visit. Pretty straightforward, pretty clear, and kind of a rational thing to say. I'm surprised George W. Bush was saying such rational things. All right, now let's fast forward to 2016. CNN, Clinton supporters reject Israel settlements proposal. Oh, boy. All right, one more here. This is 2016, Haaretz. Democrats reject platform proposal calling for, quote, end to occupation and illegal settlements. So we spoke about this recently at the Democratic Platform Committee hearing. You had Bernie's people saying, okay, so here's what we want in there. We want, wording for a two-state solution. We want to talk about human rights for Israelis and Palestinians, and we want to have language that says there should be an end to occupation and illegal settlements. What did Hillary Clinton's people say? Just nix the part about end to occupation and illegal settlements, and then we're all good. So that means Hillary Clinton surrogates and Hillary's version of the Democratic Party is further to the right on the issue of Israel than George W. Bush's Republican Party. You can't even say, if you're, in Hillary's crowd with these Democrats, you can't even say those settlements are illegal under international law, according to the UN. So you shouldn't do those. Hey, there is an occupation going on of Palestinians. In this Democratic Party, that's a no-no. No. Did you really just say that? You might be anti-Semitic. You might hate all Jews because you want to stop illegal occupation. I'm not kidding. This is the arguments they make. We covered the story where Hillary Clinton spoke at AIPAC, and she said, we got to put an end to BDS. This is hate speech. This is anti-Semitism. You know what BDS is, right? The Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Movement. Now, look, you can disagree with specific aspects of BDS, of course, just like in any movement. You can say, okay, on that one, I think they go too far. On this one, I think it makes sense. No. She says, and they're on college campuses, they just have outright censorship of some of these groups, where they say, no, this is hate speech against all Jews. This is anti-Semitism, so we're not going to allow this. So BDS is an attempt to use the economy to try to get a peace deal and get human rights for Palestinians and get an independent Palestinian state.
So boycott, divestment, and sanctions. So let's boycott businesses that are in occupied territory. Let's do divestment and let's do sanctions. Let's copy the model that worked to end apartheid in South Africa. Well, according to Hillary Clinton, well, no, that's anti-Semitism. How the fuck is that anti-Semitism? You're trying to end occupation. It's anti-Semitic to be against occupation and illegal settlements? No, but they're not trying to have a reasonable debate. They're trying to blow up the debate and smear the opponents and just get away with whatever the fuck they want to get away with. So Hillary Clinton loves Netanyahu. She loves Likud. Their position is, well, we're just going to do whatever the fuck we want. Now, they don't go as far as the Jewish Home Party, who says, we want all the land. But they say, hey, if we slowly creep and keep building more settlements and keep taking more of the land, well, we want the Americans with us. And Hillary Clinton's like, I will be a willing partner in that. Human rights for Palestinians, I don't give a fuck. Getting some sort of a peace deal, I don't give a fuck. So you can, in the Democratic Party today, you can say, I want a two-state deal. But don't you dare say, end the occupation and end the illegal settlements. So in other words, they want a two-state deal, but kind of along the borders where they are right now. We're not going to be reasonable and go to like the 67 borders and have a decent deal, no. We're going to make it so, you know, whatever land the Palestinians happen to still have, maybe we'll let you call this a state, but are we going to actually take actions to try to bring that about? Fuck no. Fuck no. We had the Palestinians recently propose through Jordan at the UN a two-state deal on the 67 borders. Netanyahu rejected it out of hand. So notice, this is the trick they do. When the Palestinians try to go through the UN, they go, oh, I feel offended by this deal you proposed. It's so unreasonable. I'm rejecting it out of hand, and you're anti-Semitic for having even proposed it. Well, then, obviously, people get pissed off in the Palestinian territories. They're occupied. They're illegal settlements. So some people go too far, and they start doing violence. Then what does the Israeli government say, and Netanyahu and Likud? Oh, terrorists! You can't even deal with these people. How dare they fight back against occupation? This is terrible. So they can't use violence to try to get a deal. When they sit face-to-face and they don't go through the international community, Netanyahu rejects everything out of hand. And then when they go to the international community, they go, oh, this is unreasonable. Why don't you sit face-to-face with me and talk about this? So it's round and round and round and round and round. You can't sit face-to-face. You can't resist violently because that's immoral and unethical. And you can't go to the international community. So what the fuck do you want them to do? There is no answer. They want to sit there and fucking take it. That's the answer. Sit there and take it. And now, in democratic politics in the U.S., you can't even say end occupation and end illegal settlements. Even George W. Bush was able to say, hey, come on now. Ex-nay on the illegal settlements and the occupation. You're going too far here. But now if you're a Democrat in the U.S. and you say end illegal settlements and occupation, they go, come on, we got to let Netanyahu get away with whatever the fuck he wants to get away with. So, no. We need to put an end to this madness. And yes, we need to be even-handed in our approach in the Middle East and in Israel-Palestine. I know that drives people fucking crazy when you say that. About liberal values and Israel, only democracy in the Middle East. Yeah. I support all of the liberal values that Israel embodies. So domestically, for example, they treat gays better. Great! I love that. You cannot use liberal values as a cover to, in other ways, act massively illiberally. So you don't get to say, I have liberal values, therefore, because I'm so great and liberal, I get to occupy you and do illegal settlements, which is, of course, not liberal. That is illiberal. Term for this, I think they call it pinkwashing, where you say, because I'm good to gays, which, again, is great. Nobody's saying that's a bad thing. That's wonderful. We wish every country in the region was as good to gays, and it's true that they're not. They're just not, okay? But you take that, and as a result of being more liberal and open-minded domestically, you say, well, therefore, then I've given myself the leeway to act super right-wing when it comes to foreign policy and when it comes to occupation and illegal settlements. No, if you want to be liberal, you should be liberal across the board. Then you really could use the argument of, no, seriously, liberal values. We're superior because we're abiding by liberal values. Sometimes and sometimes not when you do illegal settlements and occupation. So we're trying to stop that. And today, even the Democratic Party's like, not sure about this. This is a tough one. Shall we allow illegal settlements and occupation because we're on the side of the people doing the negative actions? Unfortunately, that's now U.S. politics 101. When us and our allies do it, doesn't count. It's really not that bad because we're the good guys by definition. When people we don't like do it, oh my God, talk about it endlessly. Terrorist state, rogue state, terrible people. No, let's actually try to be objective in our standards. All right, I'm going to take a quick break here, and then when I come back, we got an interesting story coming out of the Republican convention that's coming up. You're not going to want to miss that. And then we have a story that Republicans are going to have a hard time wrapping their mind around because it pits their precious gun rights against police officers. All right, stay right there, guys. Son of a bitch. All right, we're back. We are back. We have an interesting situation that may unfold at the upcoming Republican convention. Reuters reports here, the new Black Panther Party will carry firearms for self-defense during demonstrations in Cleveland ahead of next week's Republican convention, if allowed under Ohio law. Several other groups, including some supporters of Donald Trump, have said they will carry weapons in Cleveland, leading to concerns about rival groups being armed in close proximity. Quote, if it is an open state to carry, we will exercise our Second Amendment rights because there are other groups threatening to be there that are threatening to do harm to us, the chairman of the New Black Panther Party said. Okay, so I have many thoughts on this. First of all, I know for sure that all Republicans who love to talk about the Second Amendment and about how this is a right from God and government can't take it away, they're all going to come out and say, I mean, consistent here, and let's be principled here. When I say more guns equals more peace and everybody has a right to be armed, I mean it. Therefore, New Black Panthers, please, we welcome you, and we'd love it if every single one of you was armed. I know Republicans are going to take that position because they're not hypocrites. Am I right? So you guys, all of you guys, I'm sure you're writing articles about it. I'm sure you're doing segments about it. I'm sure you're saying on Fox News, wall to wall, Hannity, O'Reilly, all of them are saying, ha, totally, we'd love it if the new Black Panthers were there. But if they're there, I hope they're armed, because more guns equals more peace, and they have Second Amendment rights too. Okay? Yeah, let's do that. So is that the position they're going to take? Please. Hilarious. As if they're actually principled and they actually, you know, believe that. No, seriously, everybody guns, sure, right. No, they mean it except when it comes to, you know, New Black Panther Party, black people, Muslims. There's a bunch of groups that they're like, yeah, not so sure about this gun thing. But then my second point on this is, all comments about right-wing hypocrisy aside, no, please, none of you should come armed. Stop. Like, this is not good. Understand, guys, it's not true that more guns equals more peace. So we've spoken about it before, but the right-wing theory on this, which, by the way, back in the day was something I actually used to believe. The right-wing theory was there are more good people in the world than bad people in the world. Seems logical, right? Fairly rational thing to say. So therefore, if everybody has guns, the good people with guns outnumber the bad people with guns, and that the good people keep the bad people in check because there's so many more of them. So that's their theory. Again, that sounds plausible. There's nothing crazy about that at face value. Problem is when you actually study it and when you actually look at the details. So we've spoken about before a Harvard meta-analysis that looked at all the credible gun studies over an extended period of time, and they found that where there are more guns, there is more homicide. So more guns does not equal more peace. In fact, where there are more guns, you are more likely to die as a result of a gun. Whether it's an accident, whether it's a homicide, whether it's a suicide, there are 32,000 gun deaths in America every year, over 11,000 homicides. Those are simply not comparable numbers to other modern nations. Why? Other modern nations do stricter, more efficient gun reform. We have the laxest gun laws and the most gun deaths. If more guns equaled more peace, the United States would already be the most peaceful modern nation. We are not. We are one of the least peaceful. We have more gun deaths than the rest of them. So what that shows you is it's not true that more guns equals more peace. And when I read a story like this about new Black Panther is going to show up armed, rabid Trump supporters is going to show up armed, I see potential disaster. So please, none of you bring the weapons. None of you bring it. Please don't bring it. Please don't bring it. I want all of you to come and have your voices heard, even those I disagree with. Of course, you have First Amendment rights, free protest, free expression, free speech. So yes, you should all come. You should all have your voices heard. You can be rambunctious if you want to, because again, you have a right to protest if you so choose. But when you do with weapons, yes, you are heightening the tensions and making it so that it's more likely there is going to be some sort of an event. I don't trust the level-headedness of the new Black Panther Party and rabid Trump supporters. And I don't think it infringes on your Second Amendment rights to say you can't bring a gun to a convention and you can't open carry just outside of it. No, that seems – if you think that violates Second Amendment rights, wow is all I have to say. Wow. As you're probably in the same crowd that says, you know, you have a right to a Scud missile and chemical weapons and biological weapons and RPGs and tanks and all this shit. You don't. You don't. So although I do sense a heaping dose of right-wing hypocrisy, because are they going to come out and argue for the new Black Panthers to have the right to be armed in this situation? No. Let's put aside the hypocrisy point and let's just all get behind the idea that this is not a good idea. You guys should not bring guns. More guns does not equal more peace. And I think people get that when they look at this situation. Do you really think it's going to be more peaceful if the new Black Panthers are armed and rabid Trump supporters are armed in the same place at the same time? You know the answer to that. We have some new data here that the right will have a hard time wrapping their mind around. So the International Business Times explains, research has shown more police officers die in states with more guns. Using FBI data and correcting for a number of factors like overall violence and crime rates in the state, a 2015 study by researchers at Harvard University and Johns Hopkins University found that, quote, officers in the high gun states had three times the likelihood of being killed compared with low gun states. The study published in the American Journal of Public Health looked at a 15-year period. higher levels of civilian gun ownership appear to be a significant risk factor for the homicide of law enforcement officers, the study concluded. Yet again, this isn't that hard of an issue to figure out. We just spoke about it in the last segment. But the right-wing mentality and their theory on this, and actually the right word is hypothesis on this, is more guns equals more peace because there are more good people in the world than bad people. Therefore, if you arm everybody, the good people outnumber the bad people, and there are more guns in the good people's hands. Therefore, more guns equals more peace. There's this equilibrium if everybody's armed. Well, I mean, look, using that logic, all these right-wingers should support Iran having nukes. Every state should have nukes. If everybody's armed, I mean, it is kind of like a game theory approach. But should Iran have nukes? Well, you're assuming everybody's a rational actor. Maybe not everybody's a rational actor. That's not a crazy thing to say. Of course, not everybody's rational, right? So it just so happens when you go to the data, Harvard meta-analysis found more guns equals more homicide. More guns equals more gun violence. Not a crazy thing to figure out. Hey, were there more, if you have more ice picks in a certain area, the likelihood of dying as a result of an ice pick attack is much higher. Same thing is the case with guns. So more guns equals more peace. We already have more guns in the U.S. We would be the most peaceful. We're not. We're the least. We have 32,000 gun deaths when you count everything, homicides, suicides, accidents, every single thing. When you go to just homicides, it's over 11,000. Other modern nations don't have that. Well, now we know it's the same thing for killing cops. In states where there are fewer guns, fewer cops are killed. States where there are more guns, more cops are killed. Killed by guns. People using guns. Yes, guns don't kill people. People kill people. Yes, people kill people. People using guns. It's a lot easier to kill people with a gun than with a fork, with a knife, with all these other things that people always, well, take away the guns, people obviously going to use candles, TV monitors or something to kill people. It's harder to do it. And don't you want to make it harder to do? I'm not arguing for banning guns. I'm not. That's not my position. I've been strawmanned with that more times than I can fucking count. That is not my position. I don't want to ban guns. I want to regulate them so that we have a sane level of regulation that makes it efficient and intelligent. So right now, everybody understands, hey, should Todd down the street be able to have nukes? Not a good idea. How about biological weapons? How about chemical weapons? How about Scud missiles? How about an AK-47? How about an RPG? How about a grenade launcher? All those things, every rational person goes, no. For some reason, when you get to certain guns, they go, oh, come on, man, infringing on the Second Amendment rights. Well, no, you're not. When the founders were around, it was just muskets. They took fucking an hour and a half to reload, and you couldn't aim it right. So you're not infringing on it, but there's a line somewhere, and the debate should be, where is that line? But instead, people try to muddy the waters and obscure and act like that's not a legitimate debate to have because they just want to keep their hands on their every single kind of precious gun. Well, you need to know that if you take that position, just understand, okay, as a result of that, you will, if you live in a state with more guns, more cops are going to be killed by guns. Maybe that's something you're okay with. Maybe it is. I'm not just saying that to be a dick, but maybe that is something you're okay with. Fine. But just understand that that's your position. And understand that it's not, you know, an out there conversation, a loony conversation for people to say, hey, you know, maybe limiting high capacity magazines makes sense. Maybe doing universal background checks makes sense. Maybe having a gun buyback program where you make people a good offer makes sense. Not banning guns, but saying, hey, let's get rid of some of the extra ones that are just laying around that could be a nuisance or a menace in one way or another. These aren't crazy positions. And you need to know that the studies back up the people who want more efficient reform. And it doesn't back up the people who say gun anarchy is the answer. Gun anarchy means more dead people as a result of guns and more dead cops. Michelle Bachmann is not – no, I'm sorry. that awkward moment when you say not and the word you should say is now. I love disastrously misplaced typos that actually change the meaning of the sentence. Michelle Bachmann is now a Trump surrogate.
and she's specifically a Trump surrogate on the issue of religion. This ought to be good. So she went on an evangelical talk show to promote Donald Trump. Let's see what she had to say.
Take a look at Iran. Iran, the number one state sponsor of terror in the world, couldn't have asked for more from the United States than what they've gotten. Barack Obama has advanced Iran's jihadist dreams to annihilate Israel, the United States, and Western Christendom. How about that for fundamental transformation? That's what I'm just saying. The church can't sit this one out. We may not have a perfect candidate, but he may be the one, like the book of Daniel, that the Most High God may have lifted up Trump, because very possibly he's the only one who could defeat Hillary Clinton this fall. And if that's the case, it's good enough for me.
Quote, the Most High God may have lifted up Trump. Well, yeah, in one sense, that may make sense. The Most High God, high on fucking PCP, high on some sort of crazy hallucinogenic that makes him think Trump's good. By the way, can God get high? We're having a conversation about God being high when there isn't even a God. What are we saying? That was fucking creepy. God may have lifted up Donald Trump because Donald Trump is the only person that can beat Hillary Clinton. If your God is the God who would support somebody like Trump, fuck your God. Your God can blow me. Because think about that. Here's a guy who has said, we need to kill the families of terrorists. Women, children, toddlers, babies, whatevs, kill them. This is who God wants to support. Well, look, I guess in some places in the Bible, yeah, God does genocides of his own. So why wouldn't he want a genocidal candidate? But this is a guy who, oh my God, on so many issues, he's a fucking lunatic. This is a guy who says climate change is a Chinese hoax. That's the, God chose somebody with those kinds of reasoning skills. Really? This is who God picked. God picked this buffoon who bragged on stage during a Republican debate about the size of his dick. God's like, yeah, I got some manhood here myself. Know what I'm saying? I like this guy here, except the weird orangey ferret hair, but that's all right. We're going to pick him. He seems like a good guy. Seems like a good guy. He said wages should be lower. Is that, I mean, could you imagine? Thine wages should be lowered. In Jesus' name, amen. But this is, I mean, this is what you say when you don't have an argument. And obviously Michelle Bachmann is not the brightest person in the world. She doesn't have a fucking argument. So what do? You pull the old Islamist trick. God is on our side. I don't have anything reasonable to say, so the Almighty has picked us. Don't think, don't read, don't do anything rational. Just pick us because, hey, I'm telling you that the creator of the universe says we're the right people. You only say that if you can't say rational things. And she proved that earlier on in her statement when she's talking about Iran. She says, Iran, quote, couldn't have asked for more from the Obama administration. What does that mean? What do you mean? Did you even read the deal? I guarantee you she did not read the Iran nuclear deal. Why? Because the Iran nuclear deal makes perfectly clear, you guys cannot build a nuke and will not build a nuke, and the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency, which checks on this and regulates, they get to live up your ass. So we have assurances that you will not build a nuke and won't have a nuke, and in response for that, what's all that Iran gets? Their own money back, which we stole from them and we froze. That seems super reasonable. But no, they flipped the issue exactly on its head. They couldn't have asked for more. Now they're going to build a nuke and wipe out Israel. No, but the deal, the whole point of the deal is the opposite of that. They don't get a nuke. You got it exactly backwards. And then she said Iran and their jihadist dreams. Jihadist dreams. I'm no fan of the government of Iran. They are a Shia Islamist government. So yes, they are a theocracy. They are not jihadists. In fact, Iran, they're fighting jihadists. Do you know what a jihadist is today? It's the Salafi Muslims, the Wahhabi Muslims. These are the jihadists.
This is an extreme branch of Sunni Islam. She's blaming Shias for current-day jihadism. You have no clue what the fuck you're talking about. It's an embarrassment. But I don't know why I'd expect rational thoughts from somebody who just argued, hey, maybe God picked Donald Trump. Yeah. Seems like somebody who's quite godly. A former reality show narcissist buffoon. Okay. Now we go to Pat Robertson. Oh, boy. Pat Robertson is going to answer a question here from a viewer as to why liberals and secularists are always going after Christianity.
We have the freedom from religion. People and the American Civil Liberties Union continually fighting against Christians in all areas of our lives. Do they ever fight against any other religions because they find their actions offensive, such as praying in the streets? Are we the only target?
I think that's very perceptive. The truth is they understand Christianity is where the power is. The power doesn't exist in Islam. The power doesn't exist in Baha'i or some of these fringe religions. They don't fight against them. They do anything they want to. But they fight against Christianity because Christianity touches the souls of people. And the devil regards Christianity as a threat. Of course it is a threat because we're going to overturn him and his kingdom. So you're very perceptive in saying that.
Okay, that was adorable. So the question is, hey, why is it that the ACLU targets Christians? And why is the Freedom from Religion Foundation, they target Christians? Okay, they're not targeting Christians. What they're doing is trying to stop the infringement of religion, whatever religion it may be, but most often in the U.S. it's Christianity. They're trying to stop religion from meshing with state to the point where religion is being pushed on people who don't believe it through law. That's secularism 101. That's Americanism 101. That's the Constitution 101. So they're not against Christians. The ACLU, they stand for civil liberties. So they'll fight for your religious freedom if the thing that, you know, you're for is actually religious freedom and not pretending it's religious freedom as you force your religion on other people. Like Kim Davis would argue, hey, it's my religious freedom to prevent gay people from getting married. No, that's not your religious freedom. You don't have the freedom to take away other people's freedoms. So this person does not understand the nuances of what the ACLU does and what they fight for. Now, second of all, they target Christians and no other religions. Well, it's not true that they don't target other religions. Wherever there's a problem and it's other religions, they will fight it. But the reason why overwhelmingly the ACLU and Freedom from Religion Foundation, and yes, American liberals, probably including myself, if you go through the Secular Talk YouTube archive and you look at the breakdown of how many stories we've done on the different religions, it is mostly on Christianity. Why? Over 70% of the U.S. population is Christian. Therefore, that is the ideology, and that is the particular religion that most affects my life, where people try to get involved and shove it down our throats. So, for example, this is a fringe example, and it's not that big a deal, but it just shows you how the uber religiosity of Christians in America can affect people who don't want that to be the case. I have a public park near my house where there's Noah's Ark's story, like written out and drawn out for kids. This is a public park funded by public tax dollars, but just tax dollars. And there's the Noah's Ark story all around the park. So kids go around, their parents tell them the story of Noah's Ark, and they're indoctrinating them into this mythical fairy tale bullshit. Okay, that's why American liberals and the ACLU and Freedom from Religion Foundation, that's why we mostly discuss Christianity. Because it's not likely that I'm going to go around the corner in America where there's less than 1% of the population is Muslim and, you know, walk into some sort of public demonstration or, you know, some sort of mixing of mosque and state. That's not likely to happen because there are so few Muslims in the U.S. Now, again, that doesn't mean when there is an infringement of Islam on the state in the U.S. that you don't talk about it. Of course you do. but there are more Christians, therefore Christian ideology tries to fight its way into the government more often in the U.S. That's why American liberals, the ACLU, the Freedom From Religion Foundation, mostly discuss Christianity over the other religions. And then the second thing is, look at Pat's excuse. This is a classic, like, you know, flip it into bragging about how great you are. He goes, well, I'll tell you why they come after us. I don't know why I gave him that accent. That's not Pat Robertson's accent. I gotta do my old man voice. I'll tell you why Christianity is where they come after, because that's where the power is. And Christianity touches the soul of people. And the secularists and atheists know that. So that's why they fight us. Okay, no, alternative answer, and the correct one, is you believe in mythological bullshit. And we don't want that to affect our lives through the government. So you have fairy tales. You have the equivalent of Narnia and Mother Goose and Harry Potter and Yu-Gi-Oh! And Pokemon. And you base your life on this nonsense. And we don't want it affecting us, so we fight it. It's not like atheists and secularists are sitting there like, oh, we must defeat Christianity because we're so afraid it's true and it touches the soul of so many people. And we're obviously the devil and we want to bring them down, so we have to fight it. And he hinted that at the end, too. He's like, obviously the devil wants to fight Christianity because the devil wants to win and we're going to overturn the devil's kingdom. We're not the devil. Atheists are your neighbors. You know, atheists are the person who you bump into down at the store, your acquaintances, the father of, you know, of one of the kids at the soccer game. We're everywhere. And we're not going anywhere, and we're not the devil, and we're not evil, and all we want is to not have a made-up belief system forced on us through the government. That's not a lot to ask. Okay. Jesus, I'm running out of time again. I'll try to squeeze in two more. There's a very weird protest of Hillary Clinton that's going to happen at the Democratic convention. The Hill explains here. Protest organizer Sherry Hunkala, national coordinator for the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign, has been stocking up on boxes of dry beans and canned beans. The plan is for delegates to chow down, then let presumptive Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton smell what they think of her. Quote, the fart in is to raise attention about things that really stink in our society, said Dr. Walter Sue, the Philadelphia branch of the Philadelphia branch of Physicians for Social Responsibility. So that's what they're calling it. They're calling it a fart-in. That's what they're doing. They're all going to eat a bunch of food to make them gassy and then go to the Democratic convention. Yeah. So I have a bunch of thoughts on this. First of all, okay. Do it if you want to. I don't know. But the second thing is, okay, don't be naive enough to think this is going to change anything. And don't be naive enough to think this is going to get people on your side. Nobody wants to smell your funky ass. You know, I'm all for civil disobedience. I'm all for protesting. But I like the kind of protest to be targeted and rational. You know, I like the protests to more rally people on our side and get people invigorated and get people ready to fight for positive, progressive, and liberal change. When you do this kind of protest, honestly, it's just going to make people go, oh, those are the crazy far lefties who like doing things like this. This is why they tick. This is why they get up in the morning. They're just weirdos. That's what people are going to see. When in reality, and I don't know this, you know, the specific ideology of all the people that are going to engage in this here, but who knows? Maybe there are people who are for universal health care, for universal education. They supported Bernie Sanders. That already up front leads me to believe they're much more rational people about public policy than the Hillary people and definitely than the Republicans. But when you do stuff like this, I feel like that just distracts from an otherwise noble cause of trying to make the country more progressive, and in that respect, just more in alignment with what the people want, because the polls show the American people overwhelmingly agree with progressive priorities. So in conclusion, go ahead if you want, but I don't think it's going to help, and that is fucking creepy and nasty. Nobody wants to smell your ass, man. Nobody wants to smell your ass. All right, and finally, George W. Bush. Oh, boy, he's back. I got 90 seconds, so I might cut off at a certain point here, but we're going to cover this. This is a quick story. George W. Bush went to the funeral of the five Dallas police officers who were murdered, and he gave us this really weird moment. Michelle's face was the thing I was most interested by. You could tell, like, in her mind, she's like, what the fuck is he doing? Reel it in, big guy. Reel it in. And some people are speculating, like, oh, he was on something. I don't know whether he's drinking or he's just loopy, popped his Xanax, whatever the case is. He's just acting like he's just disconnected, you know? And, look, I don't. Some people are, like, I've seen headlines like, oh, he doesn't care about the slain Dallas cops. I don't believe that. You need to reel it in a little bit. It's just, he's socially awkward. So this isn't a real story. We're not, you know, judging his character based on this. I judge his character based on the being pro-torture and launching an offensive war that ended up killing hundreds of thousands of people. Separate conversation for a separate day, though. So his character's already bad based on other things. But this is just a dude who's, like, socially awkward and disconnected, and he's not really sure, like, what's acceptable in certain situations. And, like, you look at Obama versus him, and you see the difference between somebody who can read the emotions of the crowd around him and knows what's appropriate, and, like, he has an adult face on, and he acts like an adult. And Bush, he's a kid in a suit, man. He's a toddler in a suit. He's not that all that bright. He's not, again, this isn't a real story. This isn't like, oh, he doesn't care about the officers. But it just shows you that he's a goofball. He's a goofball. He's kind of disconnected from reality, kind of like a little bit childish. And he does weird things, like gives us awkward moments where he dances at a funeral that's a super, super sad situation. So there you have it. Some people watch this and they'll go, ah, I miss the fella. Yeah, no. I don't. Okay. We're done, guys. I love you. We'll see you back here tomorrow, same time, same place. Mwah. Kisses. Peace.